More than 175,000 Jews were living in Vienna in 1938, and when Adolf Hitler sent the German army into Austria to occupy the country, every Jew desperately looked for ways to escape. More than 110,000 of them did manage to get away, but not before they were stripped of their assets, their bank accounts, and everything that Nazi officials, many of whom had been their neighbors, could steal from them. The Lister family, Moses and Golda, and their 14-year-old son Leo could not find a way out, although Leo's sister Helena did. Leo would endure nearly 7 years of hell, and he was interviewed for us by Tanya Eckstein in Tel Aviv in 2010 when he was 83 years old. These excerpts from his interview were read for us by Henry Goodman in London.
The horrors began for us and for all Viennese Jews in March 1938, when the Germans marched into Austria. I was with my father, and it was a Friday night, and we were leaving the synagogue, and someone ran up to us and told us. And instantly my father said, "And now it begins." Jews were thrown out of school, they lost their jobs. My father was arrested on Kristallnacht, but they let him go after a while. We had to leave our flat and move into a tiny basement apartment. Thank God my sister made her way to Palestine. Then it happened on September 24th, 1942. We were summoned for a transport. We all stood in front of the former Jewish school and were pushed into open trucks. And we rode through the city with the Viennese yelling at us. I think about this day because that autumn, the German army was at the height of their victories. Western Europe was now theirs, and they had conquered Greece and Yugoslavia, and they were making gains in the Soviet Union. Well, that, of course, would be their downfall, but Stalingrad? That was still months away. They deported us from Vienna, and we were heading for Theresienstadt, just north of Prague. And I think there were 1,300 Jews in that transport, including me, my mother, and my father. And we arrived in a tiny station, and we had to walk to the Theresienstadt ghetto, dragging all our things. Theresienstadt had been a barracks town for the Austro-Hungarian army, and then after 1918 it belonged to the Czech army, and now it was under the German army. And the town, it was overflowing with imprisoned, frightened Jews from Vienna, from all over Germany, from all over Czechia. And this would be our home for the next 2 years. And as bad as it was, no one could imagine what lay in front of us. And then, it was in September 1944, thousands of inmates were called up for a transport to the east, they said. But no one knew what that meant. My mother's name was not called, but mine was, and so was my father's. We were to leave on September the 27th, Yom Kippur, but the train had problems, so we showed up the next evening. And in the meantime, my father and I, we went to a small synagogue in the ghetto, and we prayed. And then we rode, crammed in horrible boxcars for 2 days and a night. And then the doors were thrown open, and Germans and their capos screamed at us, "Haus, Haus, Haus!" And there were about 1,000 of us in this transport. It was dark, but all around us there were giant spotlights and barbed wire, concrete, and posts. A group of SS men stood in front, holding the leashes of savage dogs. and we had to walk past them. The older people were being sent to the left and the younger people to the right. Now, you could think that the left was for people assigned to lighter work, and those on the right would have to do hard labor. But you would have been wrong. When it was my turn, this SS man asked me how old I was and what my profession was. And 17 years old, sir. Electrician, I said. And I was sent to the right. I lost sight of my father. All I knew was that most men were heading off in one direction, and also there was this disgusting smell in the air and smoke, and I could see the crematoria. I figured that was for people who had already died. I didn't know that they were gassing people and immediately burning them. That's how I figured out what happened to my father. And Polish Jews were acting as the capos. One of them grabbed my watch and said to me in Yiddish, "You won't need this where you're going." After a shower, we were given prison clothes that were so light you could feel the wind blowing right through them. We were taken to barracks in Birkenau that had once been horse stables. One prisoner told me that I needed to get tattooed. Without that, they'd send me to the gas for sure. And also, I watched as prisoners were stealing everything they could from each other. Everyone was just desperate to survive. I realized that I needed to get out of there. And if you stayed in Birkenau, you were fuel for the crematoria and insanity. And I was there for 3 weeks before I heard the Poles saying that the Germans needed metal workers. And they were right. These Germans came into our barracks and said, "All metal workers to step forward." So, my friends and I, we said, "Absolutely, we were metal workers." Even though we weren't. And that saved our lives. So in October 1944, they sent us to one of the sub-camps of Auschwitz, a town called Gleiwitz, 50 kilometers away, and we got much better clothes there, blankets and food. And they took us to a factory where we repaired railway cars. Even though I wasn't a metal worker, I learned fast, I had to. And we were in Gleiwitz until February 1945, and then, now that the Soviet army was closing in, they had us line up, and we began a death march. SS men were with us, and they would just shoot the ones who couldn't keep up. It was brutally cold. Oh, it was inhuman. We reached Blechhammer, another satellite camp of Auschwitz, and there were French soldiers, British pilots, American pilots, Yugoslavs. And the next day, they called us out for roll call, but we refused to go. We could sense that the SS were desperate. The Soviets were closing in fast, you see. Still, the SS, they just shot prisoners and they started torching the barracks. And this went on, I think, for another 3 days, and suddenly we heard nothing outside. The gate was open, no SS men. We found the camp kitchen, we broke in, and we grabbed as much bread as we could, and suddenly an SS man was standing outside with a machine gun shooting at us. I threw myself on top of a mountain of corpses. I looked up slowly, and the SS man, that beast, he ran away. I dug myself out of the pile of corpses, but I never let go of that bread, which I took back to my friends, some of whom could barely move. And the next day, we walked out of the camp along a dirt road. And Soviet army trucks came roaring up to us, and the soldier with a fur hat got out of the first truck. And that was the first time that I saw a Russian. Maybe he was Ukrainian. And I didn't know what to say, so I yelled out, "Yit, yit, yit, Jew, Jew, Jew." And he looked at us, and he said, "Я тоже Ид. I am also a Jew." In fact, you know, several Soviet officers surrounded us, and they were all speaking Yiddish with us. We took the Soviet soldiers to the camp, and they immediately started treating all the prisoners. It was the first act of kindness that I had seen, in years. But the Soviets were nervous about the German counteroffensive, and this officer, he said to me, "You just go. You're free, go anywhere you want." So we went to a camp for former prisoners, and someone told me that Theresienstadt had not been cleared out, that there were people still in that camp. So I was shocked. I rushed to Theresienstadt and I started asking everyone if it was possible that my mother was still alive. And she was. I found her living in the attic of one of the barracks. And the first thing she asked is, "Where is your father?" And then within a minute she said, "I'm thankful that you came back to me. Now we can go home."
Leo Lister and his mother Golda made their way back to Vienna, but only long enough to realize they could never live there again. They left for Israel soon after. Leo Lister married, had two children, and was decorated by the Republic of Austria for sharing his story with students everywhere. Leo Lister passed away in 2017.